The Asian Classics Institute presents What the Buddha Really Meant with Geshe Michael Roach, recorded live in New York City in November of 1998. This is the beginning of Class 5.
Basically, we had a bodhisattva came up to the Buddha and said, during the first turning of the wheel, you said nothing exists by definition. I'm sorry, everything exists by definition. And then during the second turning of the wheel, you said nothing exists by definition. So what did you mean when you said nothing exists by definition? Okay, and that's how it got started, all right? And then the Buddha went through and said, well, in the second turning of the wheel, when I said nothing exists by definition, or nothing has any nature of its own, I was actually referring to three different ways in which things don't have a nature. And some of them exist by definition, and some of them don't exist by definition. And of course, I wouldn't say anything so radical as to say nothing had any nature of its own from its own side. I would never say that, okay? That's a third turning of the wheel, all right? And then this bodhisattva's question to Lord Buddha is, it begins the third turning of the wheel. And then he answers the bodhisattva, and he gives all these clarifications, supposed clarifications, right? Okay, because the student has asked a question, the student is not ready to believe that the second turning of the wheel is literal. Okay, so Buddha has to backtrack and redesign things for this particular student and people like him who later will be called mind-only school people, or people in 1998 who think like mind-only school people. So he has to kind of soften the blow. And you see His Holiness the Dalai Lama used this method all the time, and all great teachers use this method all the time. If you, you know, see Ken Rinpoche teaching a class in New Jersey, and then you see him teaching, you know, 100 monks in India, it's quite different, you know. And it's like that all over the world, okay? So we've had this exchange. We've had a question asked of Lord Buddha, and then we've had the Bodhisattva, and then the Bodhisattva gets his answer from Lord Buddha, and we call this the exchange. Okay, this is the exchange. Now we've reached a part, a very famous part, in the study of this text, in the study of the mind-only school, called the outcome of the exchange. Okay, and in the monastery, when they explain this word outcome, it means like, they say it's like doing a business deal. One guy puts up an offer, the other guy puts up an offer, they negotiate for a while, one guy changes his offer, the other guy changes his thing, and then after all is said and done, what's the result of the transaction? You know, who makes money, who doesn't make money, what kind of thing comes out of this business deal, okay? And when they explain explain in the monastery, they use that wording. So we're going to discuss tonight what we call the outcome of the exchange, or the profit of the business deal, or, you know, what they got out of that exchange between whom? Lord Buddha and the Bodhisattva. Okay? The Bodhisattva is going to say, aha, I learned something, Lord Buddha, you know, and that's called Drupten. Say Drupten.
Drupten.
Okay. I think I actually have it on one of these things. Let me see. Say Drupten. Drup means, Drupa means to accomplish. Dun means the meaning. Drupten means the outcome of the exchange, or the meaning that results from the exchange. Okay? And it's very famous in the study of Trange, of when the Buddha was speaking literally and when this Buddha was speaking figuratively. Okay? And this is the important part, okay, of the whole class. It's the next minute. Okay? The Bodhisattva says, I get it. You know, and Lord Buddha says, what? And he says, now I get it. He says, the first time you turned the wheel of the Dharma, you didn't mean us to take you literally. You didn't mean what you were saying. And then the second time you turned the wheel of Dharma, again you didn't mean what you were saying. And then now, in the third turning of the wheel, now you're telling us the real truth. You know, now you're giving us to a straight. Okay, that's called Drupten. That's all. Okay? So, if your homework question said, what does Drupten mean? Outcome of the exchange. What's the outcome of the exchange? The Bodhisattva gets it. Gets what? When, in the first turning of the wheel, Lord Buddha said that everything in the universe exists by definition. What's that mean in this school, by the way? You better know. Exists from its own side, through its own unique way of being. Okay? And you believe that. Okay? You believe that. You really do believe that. That's why, by the way, you cannot have a negative emotion if you don't believe that. How's that? Okay? You can't have a mental affliction unless somewhere in your mind you're believing that. Because to be angry at someone or to desire something, you cannot be cognizant of at that moment that it's a production of your karma and your projection. You cannot be thinking that and have a mental affliction at the same time. That's the whole reason to study emptiness. Because you're hoping to accomplish the reverse. You're hoping that your perfection of wisdom gets so muscle-bound in your brain that it beats up your mental affliction. Okay? You cannot entertain a mental affliction in your mind and be aware at the same moment that this thing is a projection which is forced on me by my past good karma or bad karma. You cannot be angry at someone and simultaneously understand that you've created them. Okay? You cannot have desire for something you can't get and simultaneously be aware that you can never get it if you don't have the karma to get it, to project it. You see, I mean, you can't have understanding and mental afflictions in your mind at the same time. That's the whole reason to study Buddhism. That's the whole reason to study emptiness, okay? You can't have a negative thought if you understand the emptiness of the object you're having the mental affliction about. It's very cool. They can't stay in the same brain at the same time. They're called Yenbo and Pangcha, and that's their nature. Okay, so the Bodhisattva gets it, you know, he says, okay, I get it. When you taught the first theory of the real Dharma, and you said that everything existed from its own side, now you know what it means, right? And you hold that, you believe that. Every time, what I'm trying to say is, there's a thermometer or a barometer, so that how you know when you're being ignorant is what? A mental affliction. Okay, the minute you're angry, jealous, desire, anything else, you must have just had a case of ignorance. Okay? Must. Okay? It's very interesting. It's very, very interesting. You cannot have a negative emotion unless ignorance has just been parked there. Okay? It's very interesting. You must be believing that that boss that you don't like or that girl that you did like come from their own side. And then your emotions that accompany that. Okay? You have to be thinking that. You can't understand... he's yelling at me because my mind is projecting it because I was angry at someone before. You can't be thinking that and be angry at the same time. It's impossible. Okay? You can't have knowledge and ignorance and mental afflictions in your mind at the same time. Impossible. That's the whole reason to study knowledge. So you can stop your mental afflictions and be happy. Okay? All right. So that's what it would be like if the pain came from its own side. It would be coming from its own side, out there, through a nature of its own. And if a dog walked in, he'd see a pen. If a bug walked in, it would be comfortable to hold in his fingers, okay? If two people sitting here looked at the pen, they would both like it exactly the same. Because it comes from its own side. And it has its own nature of being good or bad and of being a pen. Okay? So that's what Lord Buddha said during the first turning of the wheel. It does come from its own side. It does have its own way, a unique way of being. It does have its own identity from its own side. Okay? And obviously he was being figurative. He's trying to make it easy for people who would freak out if he said, hey, guess what? You're not sitting there. It's just your projection, okay? So it's too much for them, okay? Then in the second turning of the wheel, he like, according to the mind-only school, he was just trying to shock people, you know? Nothing exists, okay? You know, Heart Sutra, nothing. Your ears, your eyes, your nose, your tongue, your nose, you know, Nigel's ears don't exist, you know? And he's like, and he's being like, oh, too much, you know? So the mind-only school says he was exaggerating, okay? This thing, nothing comes from its own side. Not even things which anyone in this room can see works. You know, not even those things, not even the sun that comes up every morning comes from its own side. Come on, Lord Buddha, you're being too radical, okay? That can't be a mental projection of 6 billion people at the same time, right? Okay? It is, by the way. All right? Yeah. Somebody had a question? Yeah. Loud.
How does a dog identify as a pen?
In the mind-only school, he has to because it's a pen from its own side. It is broadcasting pen. It's not that you're superimposing penness on it. It is broadcasting pen to anyone who looks at it. That's what it means to exist by definition in this school. You got to get used to that. Your boss is a bad person no matter who meets him. Now, I know some people like him. They haven't understood him yet. Okay? Really. And your mind thinks that. And your mind is mind only anytime you have a mental affliction. How many times today did you get irritated, upset, fearful, anxiety, desire, you know, wanting something? Every single time you did that, you were stuck in mind only school. That's why we study mind only school, so you can get out of it. Yeah.
Could a dog have a different kunta about the pen than a human has?
Yeah, I mean, in fact, the dog does have it. Obviously, has a different construct about the pen. Obviously, a dog doesn't think of it as a pen. But this school, you'd have to say they do. You'd have to say they're looking at a pen and thinking of it as something to chew on. You see? Okay, big difference. We know it's a pen, but these poor animals, you know, they're not as evolved as we are. Okay, all right. But when a deity, tantric deity, looks at this thing, they see the golden light and flashing, you know, pure bliss when they look at this cylinder. So who's right? You know? Yeah.
So could you still be maintaining the lie when you look at the pen? I mean, they can't be saying that they see.
He says in this school, you can't be saying that a fly perceives a pen. You go turn on, you know, Discovery Channel about how flies perceive things, and the scientists on the Discovery Channel say, the fly lands on the pen. You know? He's already, you see? And the poor fly can't perceive the pen the way you and I do as a writing instrument. You know, like he's already declaring that it's self-existently a writing instrument from its own side and not a landing field. You see what I mean? You know what I mean? Why is it more one than the other? You see what I mean? And he's already calling it a pen. Should have called it a cylinder, right? But even that's touchy, okay? All right, so that's Drupadin, okay? The Bodhisattva says, I get it. You were being figurative the first turning of the wheel, you were being figurative the second turning of the wheel. What do you say, first turning of the wheel? Everything exists by definition, from its own side. This is a pen from its own side. What do you say in the second turning of the wheel? Nothing does. Come on, that's too radical. What do you say in the third turning of the wheel? Let's do a, you know, D'Amato compromise here, you know. Sometimes it is and sometimes it's not. You know, there's three different natures, and sometimes they do exist by definition, and sometimes one of them does exist by definition. Sorry, two of them exist by definition, and one of them doesn't. And that's what I really meant. Okay? It's like a politician. All right. Next part. So if the question said, according to the mind-only school, which of these three turnings of the wheel, also called groups of sutra, okay? So those are code words for the same thing, turning of the wheel or a group of sutras, okay? Were spoken literally and which are figurative or something we must interpret further. So now you know, because you've studied Dukdin, okay, you've studied the outcome of the exchange. There was an exchange between Lord Buddha and Bodhisattva, and now we all know that in the mind-only school, the first two turnings of the wheel were spoken figuratively, and the third one was spoken literally. Okay, the next part of that question says, according to the middle way school, which are to be taken on face value and which are not? Yeah, second one is face value, first and third ones are something you have to interpret. Did the Buddha mean it when he backtracked in the third turning of the wheel according to the middle way school? No. He's just trying to take it easy on those students who couldn't handle the real thing, okay? Did he mean it in the first turning of the wheel when he said everything exists truly? Everything exists from its own side. No, not even, neither according to the mind-only school nor according to the middle-way school was that first turning of the wheel something that we have to take on face value. Okay? Now the big difference comes in the second turning of the wheel when Lord Buddha made this radical statement. Nothing exists by definition. Okay? The middle-way school says, take it on face value. Okay? The mind-only school says, he was just being too radical. Okay? All right, you got to get used to that. Now I want to tell you one more thing about that question, because it's a trick question. Because the last thing says, why so in each case? Okay. Now I have to tell you a new piece of information. All right. The words figurative and literal in the middle way school have a different meaning than in the mind only. Okay. If you're a middle way person and you say, this turning of the wheel was figurative, you don't mean it's to be taken on face value. It's not to be taken on face value. And when you say this teaching was literal, in middle way school, it doesn't mean you do take it on face value. Okay. All right. Sorry. In the middle way school, when you say one of this particular turning of the wheel, say the second turning of the wheel, was literal, you don't mean it's to be taken on face value. It has a totally different meaning. For them, the very word literal and the very word figurative has a different connotation. Totally different meaning. Okay? And you have to know that. Right? And to them, to be literal and to be something you can take on face value do not mean the same thing. Okay? Now, what does it mean in the middle way school when you say this is a teaching that the Buddha meant literally and this is a teaching that the Buddha meant figuratively? There's only one criterion, don't forget it. Does that teaching primarily address emptiness? Clearly. Okay, let's say clearly. If a teaching clearly teaches emptiness, then in the highest school of all Buddhism, that's what the Buddha really wanted to talk about. Then we call it literal, okay? Nedun, okay? Then we say, this is a literal teaching. This is a case in which the Buddha was talking about what he really wanted to talk about. Okay? Very radical, very interesting, okay? Meaning, if you see emptiness directly in this life, you is out of here. Gyunshupa, stream enterer. You're on the conveyor belt. You must get out in a certain number of lifetimes, normally 7. Okay? You're on your way out. Most important, most crucial, by far the most important thing to do in this lifetime, you must see emptiness directly. Anytime the Buddha taught emptiness clearly in a teaching, he was talking about what he really wanted to talk about. And anytime he didn't, he was being figurative, because he's trying to get you up to that. Okay? Yeah, let me teach you how to put your robes on. You know, let me teach you Vinaya. Let me teach you about the hell realms. Let me teach you about bodhicitta. They're all aimed at getting you to see emptiness directly. So are they literal? No, not in the middle way school. Are they figurative? Yes. Why? Because they don't clearly address the question of emptiness. Okay? So that's tricky. All right? Now, face value is a different thing. Okay? Face value means, can you take it as the wording says? In the middle way school, okay, got it? So, I'll backtrack a little bit. Mind only school, to be literal and to be something you can take on face value is the same thing or not?
Yeah,
in the mind only school. In the mind only school, is figurative and something you must interpret further or something you cannot take on face value, are those the same things? In the mind-only school. Does it mean the same thing to say, this teaching of the Buddha was figurative, meaning you must interpret it further, you cannot take it on face value? Yes, that's what they mean. Okay, now, move to middleweight school, okay? Move up. It doesn't mean the same thing to be literal and to be something you can take on face value. No, because literal in the middleweight school is a code word for any teaching in which the Buddha talked about what he really wanted to talk about, which was what? Emptiness. Okay, so you got to get used to that. So if somebody asks you, from the mind-only point of view, is the third turning of the wheel literal? In which Buddha backtracked and said, yeah, half the stuff I said was true and half the stuff I said wasn't. In mind-only school?
Yes.
Totally literal. Okay, are you to take it on face value?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, now go to middle-weight school. Ready? This is very good for understanding emptiness, okay? Is the third turning of the wheel literal?
No.
No, why not? It doesn't clearly talk about all things being empty or something like that, okay? It doesn't clearly talk about that. Or does it? We'll have to talk about it, okay? We'll have to talk about it. You gotta be careful on that, okay? Yeah. I'm sorry? Maybe all the parts of the third turning of the wheel talk clearly about emptiness. He either says, I didn't mean that to be empty, and I did mean that to be empty. We got to talk about it. I got to look it up, actually. Yeah.
How can you, like, I mean, from all of this, I presume that you'll be able to really use this to discern emptiness if you actually see it, but how do you tell? I mean, that's kind of like...
How do you tell what?
If you actually are perceiving emptiness.
Oh, many people ask me this question, you know, given that so many great, brilliant pundits, wise men, thinkers of ancient India have these questions, and you know, they can't decide among three of them what emptiness really means. What chance do we have, normal American, and how do you know if you're seeing it or not? You know, given that these, you know, somebody like Baba Viveka cannot misunderstand emptiness, so what chance do we have? There's a quality of the direct perception of emptiness that you know when you're seeing it, okay? So there's no question, okay? When you come out of that experience, you can't think about it when you're in it, okay? But directly after it, you have a direct, valid perception, we call pramana, that you just saw emptiness directly, and you are never wrong. And you always have that perception right after that, okay? So people ask me, I think I saw emptiness, I'm not sure if I saw emptiness directly. If you're not sure, it's certain that you didn't see it directly. If you did not see your future lives, if you did not see the day of your own enlightenment and all those other things that happen on that same day, you certainly haven't seen emptiness directly. And you don't. And if you're not sure if you saw emptiness directly, you definitely haven't seen emptiness directly. Okay? You have to. Those are experiences that happen to a person who comes out of that perception. And those experiences are so important, they dump them into four groups and called them the Four Noble Truths, mistranslated as noble, meaning Arya. Person who just saw emptiness, which is the most basic and important teaching in Buddhism. Okay? But you don't experience those four truths directly until you've just seen emptiness directly. Okay? Last question, or else this is a long class tonight. Remember, it was Sal who kept you here, not me. Yeah.
Not self-existent.
Okay, not self. Yeah, it was your karma. It's your karma to suffer till 10:30 tonight. Okay. We're about to do that. He wants a matrix. Let's do a matrix. Okay. You asked for it. Before I do the matrix, one more small thing. In the sutra, where the bodhisattva says, I get it, you know, the first one was something I have to, is figurative, the second one's figurative, the last one's literal. When he says that, he doesn't quite say it in those words, and I want to give you the words that he does use. And these are code words for the same thing, okay? He says the following, these are very famous. I'm just going to do them in English. You can read them in Tibetan in the reading. Number one is they have something higher, okay? I mean, the bodhisattva doesn't say, oh, I get it, these are figurative and these are literal. He says, oh, I get it, there's something higher than the first and second turning of the wheel. Meaning, they're not literal. You see what I mean? When you say this is not the highest interpretation, The implication is that this is something I have to take figuratively, all right? By the way, I'm simplifying it for you, and there's a huge debate about each one of these expressions, and you can get it in the reading. But I figure in the homework you might as well stick with these, okay? It's the obvious one. There is something higher, meaning what? The third turning of the wheel is higher than the first two. Okay, the Bodhisattva says, I get it. There's something higher than number one, and there's something higher than number two. But number three, what's he going to say? There is nothing higher. This is the ultimate explanation. Okay. Who would use this sutra to prove their school? You've got to be mine only. Okay? They're going to search through thousands of sutras and come up with the one where Lord Buddha seems to support their ideas. Okay? And this is it. Okay, here's the second one. What's the they here, by the way?
One and two.
Yeah, first and second turning of the wheel. First and second turning of the wheel. There's something higher. What? Third turning of the wheel. Why? Because in the third turning of the wheel, the Buddha spoke what he really wanted to say, which is that half of what I said was true and half of what I said wasn't. Half the things in the world don't exist by definition, but half of them do. Okay? All right? Whew, awful quiet out there. All right. I figure everybody's going to drop out or drop out by now, so I can just start opening it up. They is always the first and second turnings of the wheel. Okay? As compared to the third turning of the wheel. When he gets to the third turning of the wheel, by the way, he reverses all these. He says nothing higher. They don't leave an opening. It doesn't leave an opening, meaning the third turning of the wheel. Okay? This one, he says, by the way, that's an important thing in the text. This one doesn't have anything higher. Then what's he talking about?
Third.
Why would he refer to the third turning of the wheel as this one? Hey, baby, he's in the middle of it. The third turning of the wheel started when he opened his mouth. This one is real close to him. Okay? He's experienced it as he talks. This is the third turning of the wheel. Okay? All right? Okay, number two, they leave an opening, meaning they can leave an opening for someone to fight over them. What the hell does this stuff mean? What did the Buddha say when he said everything didn't exist from its own side? Or what did he mean when he said everything didn't exist from its own side? They leave an opening for fighting, discussion, you know, questioning. What did you mean? Okay, does the third turning of the wheel leave such an opening? He's just being literal, okay? No one's going to fight it. Nobody with a brain is going to fight about that, right? Who's saying that?
Mind
only school. Okay, middle way with school would say nobody with a brain would think the third turn of the wheel didn't leave an opening. Okay, but don't forget what school we're in. We're in middle way school. Sorry. Mind only school. Just checking. Okay. They leave an opening. Okay. And then there's a whole big fight that's gone on for 2,000 years about what the word opening means here. But you can generally take it as opening to have a fight about it, or opening for discussion, or opening for argument about it, okay? And then you can read the other ones in the text, which you have, okay? We translated it and it comes out. By the way, you should thank the people, Aura, Christy, those other people. They work like, they get this reading like at 10 o'clock in the morning, and they work all day to convert it and make it pretty and all that. So if you get a chance, you should thank them. Okay. This is easy, okay? From the mind-only school point of view, do the first and second turnings of the wheel have to be interpreted further?
Yes.
Yeah. You can't just leave it at that. Nothing exists by definition. You must discuss it further and interpret it. Or you can't just leave it at everything does exist by definition, which is what the first turning of the wheel says. You have to interpret it further, okay? Interpreting it further and being figurative are just about the same thing in this school, right? Okay, number four. Sorry? Oh, they all boil down to the same thing. I mean, I'm just trying to give you the actual wording of the sutra. Now, different scholars over the last 2,000 years, different thinkers, have said he's trying to get at a slightly different shade of meaning here. And you can read the commentary. You'll have it. You'll have it at the end of class. You can study it. There are arguments. You get the Chinese commentaries version, you get an Indian ancient commentaries version, and then you get Jetson Kapa's boiling down of it about each one of these expressions. Okay? Last one. They serve as a basis of contention, meaning somebody will fight over this. If you just leave it like that and publish it, if you don't start spreading those sutras in mind-only town, people are going to start arguing about it, okay? You can't just leave it like that. It's going to cause a fight, okay? People are going to start arguing about it, okay? These are the four ways in which the Bodhisattva expresses himself during the Drupada. You know, when he says, ah, now I've seen the light. He doesn't say, you were meant that figuratively or you meant that literally. He goes through each of these four for each turning of the wheel. When he talks about the first turning of the wheel, he says, oh, it has something higher. It leaves an opening for dispute or discussion or question. It has to be interpreted further. This is going to cause a fight. Okay? He says that. Then when he gets to the second wheel, he says exactly the same thing. But then when he gets to the third wheel, what does he say? He puts a knot on each one of these. Okay? Ah, the third turning of the wheel has nothing higher. The third turning of the wheel leaves no opening for any further questions. The third turning of the wheel, we don't have to interpret further. We can take it literally. The third turning of the wheel, nobody could, in their right mind, could ever argue about. Okay? I mean, Jetsu Kapa is careful to say, in their right mind, in his commentary, the very last paragraph you're going to read says, you know, contention means people who aren't crazy, okay? I mean, crazy people can fight over anything, but no person in their right mind would fight over the third turning of the wheel. Obviously, it's literal, according to my nomi, okay? Now, in the monastery, in the very beginning of our studies, in the first few years, we go through a course called Chunkor. Say Chunkor.
Chunkor.
This is not part of the mind-only school. This is a study that we do in the lower Majjhimika school, the Satantrika. Satantrika. And sorry, Svatantrika. Okay. And it's a very important subject, and I'm going to give you just a few little tastes of it. This is basically boils down to Sal's grid. Okay. You just draw a big, you know, Excel chart and divide it all up, you know, like who believes the first turning of the wheel, who doesn't believe the first turning of the wheel, what did they teach during the first turning of the wheel, who was it taught for, where did he teach it, okay, and what was the main subject matter, and what's the viewpoint that it expresses, okay. By the time we end up tonight, you'll have this huge chart about all the details of all the three turnings of the wheel, because you're a Buddhist, you should know, okay, you should know about the three turnings of the wheel, because eventually they evolved into the difference between Hinayana and Mahayana and everything else. You know, Hinayana schools say Buddha never taught the second and third turning of the wheel. Okay? Like that. You have to know. You have to know the difference. Okay? So Chunkor. For those of you who know Tibetan, there's an illegal prenasal here. Okay? It happens sometimes, right? Nam Dzorma. No. That's normal. How about Dorje or Gyaltsen or things like that, okay? Say Chunkor.
Chunkor.
Chunkor. Chun means Dharma. Kor means wheel. Wheel of the Dharma. Okay? Chunkor. It's a whole subject in the monastery. You might spend 6 months on what we're about to do tonight, which is the way this whole class is going, okay? Okay? For the last few years. All right. We're going to discuss Chunkor. And I'm just going to make for you a chart for each turning of the wheel. Okay, first, name. Name of the first turning of the wheel, okay, in Tibetan. There's going to be a lot of Tibetan tonight because you have to know it, okay? And please turn in your homeworks. If you don't, you won't learn anything. Trust me. I turned out students for 15 years who didn't retain anything, and I don't want to do any more, okay? Say Denshi,
Denshi.
Chunkor.
Chunkor.
Denshi,
Denshi.
Chunkor.
Chunkor.
Denshi means the four Arya truths, the four truths. Okay? Those groups, four groups of experiences that anyone who sees emptiness directly has during the 24 hours following that. Okay? or until you go to bed. Okay, I don't know. Call it 12, 14 hours. Okay, during that time you have extraordinary spiritual realizations, like more than you've ever had in your whole life in 10 hours. And they can all be grouped into four categories. And those are the four Arya truths. Okay? And that was the main subject of the first turning of the wheel. Okay, if anybody says, you know, what do you call the first turning of the wheel? Well, it's either called the first turning of the wheel or the turning of the wheel on the four Arya truths. Okay? Mistranslated as noble truths, and continues to be spread that way. Okay? Where was it taught? I mean, by the way, in general, you can say that for each turning of the wheel, there was a huge convocation. At some point, there was a huge gathering of people who learned this particular turning of the wheel in a certain place, in a certain time. Does it mean that everything Lord Buddha said at that place to those people constitutes the first turning of the wheel? No. Like he might have said, you guys can take a break now or something like that. All right? Okay? Does it mean that something he said 50 years later couldn't be included in the first turning of the wheel? No. If he taught the four truths 50 years later and said they exist by definition, then you can throw that into the first turning of the wheel. Okay? But generally speaking, each turning of the wheel generally relates to some huge gathering that happened. This particular one happened where? First turning of the wheel. First time Buddha ever taught. Varanasi. And in a deer park, Sarnath. Okay? So Varanasi in Tibetan is Varanasi. Okay. Why didn't they put a V? They don't have a V. Okay? No V and no F. That's why you have Kopi for coffee and Wan for a van. Okay? And if you've ever been to the Wetkin to see the Pope, okay. I read that in a newspaper one day. I asked Rinpoche, what's Wetkin? What's Bob? You know, they said it's Vatican and Pope. Okay. 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 So that's Varanasi. That's where he taught it. Okay. East Bengal. West Bengal. Right? Today, Bengal. Okay. Still there. It's outside of Varanasi. Okay. I hear. I've never been there. Okay. Who did he teach the first turning of the wheel mainly to? Did you have a question? Sorry? You want me to leave it on for a while? Whoa. Okay. Who did he teach it to? Who do you think would be the main disciples that wouldn't get anything? I mean, you'd have to say about emptiness. Yeah, oh, don't worry. Everything exists from its own side. It has its own nature. You could say Hinayana school. Okay? Students in the Hinayana school. By the way, you have to, when we got to this part in the monastery, the teacher took the time to stop and say, I'm not talking about those beautiful holy monks in Sri Lanka, Thailand. That's not what I mean when I say Hinayana. Hinayana in this context refers to people who think with the viewpoint that says that pen must come from its own side. That makes you lower way. Okay? It's not dissing those beautiful, holy, wonderful monks in Sri Lanka, Thailand, Burma, everything. You know, it's not in scripture, in Buddhist philosophy. That's not what we mean by Hinayana. Hinayana means a person who holds a viewpoint about this pen, which is still immature. Okay? Which is still kind of first grade. Okay? And there are lots of monks and lay people in Tibet who still think of this pen that way. And there's lots of monks in Sri Lanka who understand the emptiness of this pen. Okay? So, it's not a statement of, you know, traditions, okay? It's a statement of viewpoint. And you belong to Nyingma Tekpa, if you hold that about the pen, that it must come from its own side. If you belong to what Hinayana means in this case, lower way, then Buddha has to treat you with kid gloves, right? He has to say, oh, don't worry, everything exists by definition. By the way, could you study suffering and the source of suffering and try to get out of it? And teach them the four noble truths. Okay, four Arya truths. Right? Nyenta means listener. Okay, in this case it's a code word for Hinayana. Tekpa means yana or vehicle. So it's listener vehicle. Now, listener means a lot of things in Buddhism. In this case, it means people who have a mindset, an emptiness mindset, which is still not very advanced. they're still in like the first, they correspond to the first two schools of ancient India. Okay, which are what? The Abhidharma schools and then the logic schools. You've studied both. Okay? But those are what we consider Hinayana from the point of view of how they think about emptiness. Their thinking about emptiness is not very progressed yet. Are they stupid and to be rejected? No. You have bodhisattva vows against that. You have bodhisattva vows against saying that. Okay? Because they are beautiful, holy, sacred, wonderful teachings as lower rungs on a ladder to get to a higher place. Okay? And it'd be stupid to take half the rungs off a ladder because they're not close to the top yet. You couldn't get to up to the top without them. Okay? And anyone who's going to teach Buddhism or see emptiness directly, you better know those four schools. You better know how to think about emptiness. Because I think you already have a taste of how a lot of your life is mind-only school. You thought you were Madhyamika. But when I point out, you know, if you really were Madhyamika, you wouldn't get angry at anybody the whole day. You can't. Okay? If you really were thinking about them as a Madhyamika person thinks about things, you couldn't get angry. I accuse you of being a mind-only school person today every time you got upset at somebody. Okay? And myself. Because I got upset at a bunch of people today. All right. What was the main subject matter? I say main. It gets you out of a lot of problems in the debate ground. You should learn it. Okay? And somebody says, wait a minute. He said that too. He said, oh, I said main. Okay? Zolor. Okay? Very useful in the debate ground. Almost every sentence you say in the debate ground starts with, mainly. Okay. So you see, Sal, we're building up your chart, okay? Your grid. And I was thinking to put it on a grid. It wouldn't fit, though, you know? Okay. Maybe you guys can put it on a grid. Somebody should put it on a grid. How's that? Say, Pakpe, Demba, Shi. Pakpe, Demba, Shi. Pakpa means what?
Arya.
Yeah, Arya. Someone who has seen emptiness directly. Okay? In Sanskrit, Arya. Hitler misused it, abused it, screwed around with the word. Okay? Has nothing to do with that. It does mean superior in the sense of being special. Because you've seen emptiness directly. Okay? That's what pakpa means. That's what arya means. Okay? The verb pakpa means to be higher than something else. Like, there's a part in the Abhidharma Kosha that describes this mythical tree that grows way over our continent. And that's called, it pakpas up above the whole world. Okay? So that's what pakpa means as a word. Okay? Demba means truth. Truth. And she means four. The four arya truths. Okay? That was the main subject matter of the first turning of the wheel. Okay? He taught it first to how many people? The very, very, very first turning of the wheel. Only five. Those four tiger cubs and their mom. Okay? For those of you who were in the first class back in 1983, was it? I don't think there's anybody here, actually. Okay. We read that sutra during that class. Okay? Anyway, that was the first group. And upon his teaching it, one of the people there actually achieved the direct perception of emptiness right at that moment. I mean, right shortly afterwards. Okay? And so it was a really beautiful turning of the wheel. Because we're going to talk about the meaning of turning a wheel. Okay? We're going to get into that later. But that's a classic turning of the wheel because of the reaction of the student due to the turning by the teacher, there was a real turning of the wheel at that moment. Okay, and we'll get into the meaning of turning of the wheel. Okay. What was the viewpoint expressed? It's kind of long, I'm sorry. You know, what was the main viewpoint about the world that Lord Buddha expressed at that time? Is there anybody here who was in KTD in 1983? I don't think so. No? Okay. Anyway, we read the Sutra of the Holy Golden Lion and about the tigress. And, huh? Robin was there. But she's not here. Huh? I didn't what? I didn't give homework. That was a mistake. Say, Chenam, Rangki Tseni, Ki, Trupa. Chenam means everything in the universe. Chen means Dharma, Nam means plural. Every existing object in the universe. Okay, Chenam. Ranki, Teniki, Drupa means exist by definition. Seni Mepa means, Seni Mepa, it literally means no definition. What do you think it really means? Things don't exist by definition. Okay, Chunkor means turning of the wheel of the Dharma. Okay, this is the name of Dharma wheel turning number two. Okay, because during that turning of the wheel, Lord Buddha said, nothing exists by definition. Nothing has any identity from its own side. Okay? And so that turning of the wheel, that whole career, part of his career where he taught that, is called the turning of the wheel where he said nothing exists by definition. Okay? Where did he teach it? Same place as the Heart Sutra. That, in fact, was part of that. Vulture's Peak. Here's the Tibetan. This should be Ri, okay? This place still exists. It's in a place called Rajagura. Okay, it's also in Bengal. It's a peak. Okay, Vulture's Peak. Okay, Scott Hamilton didn't climb it yet, but he's planning. Okay. For those of you who care, Jaga means vulture. Pumbo means skanda, but it means here shaped like a vulture. Okay, and Ri means peak. Okay. Who were the students that he meant that teaching for? Tek Chen. Okay, Mahayana. Mahayana from the point of view of their viewpoint about emptiness. Okay, people who had a very mature viewpoint about emptiness. Okay. Question, would the mind-only school say it was taught for middle-way school people? Second turning of the wheel. Would they say it was aimed at middle-way school people? Yeah, that's the one they think is literal. When the Buddha said all that radical stuff, who believed him? Middle-way, those dumb middle-way people. They were taken in by it. Okay. By the way, real mind-only school scholars say we also were the students meant for that because we knew he was talking figuratively. Okay. All right. That's another, we'll do that some other day. Okay. Main subject of the second turning of the wheel. You're going to become turning of the wheel experts by the end of tonight. Thank you. What's Tomba Nyi mean? Emptiness, shunyata, okay? Emptiness. The lack of a pen that comes from its own side that was never there in the first place and won't be there and couldn't be there now anyway. Okay? All right? What viewpoint did Lord Buddha teach during the second turning of the wheel? That's enough for me to get some smoothie. That's why I write the long ones. By the way, after you've written it, I can tell you can just add a ma to the one you had before. Okay. You just negativize the one that came before. Okay, ma. You just add the one syllable ma, which means things. You know, in English, when you reverse something, you have to say nothing, no existing thing in the universe exists by definition. You see what I mean? And translators sometimes don't catch that. In English, the positive you say, everything in the world exists by definition. That's the first turning of the wheel. That's the viewpoint of the first turn of the wheel. But when you get to the second turn of the wheel, in normal English we say, nothing exists by definition. Okay? And some translators mistranslated it, everything doesn't exist by definition. You say, which you don't say in normal English because it gives you the wrong meaning sometimes. It's ambiguous. Okay? Okay, ready for the third turn of the wheel. Where is it? Name of it. By the way, sometimes it's just called the last one, but that's too easy, so I wrote out the long one. Okay. Say, Lekche Chungkor. Lekche Chungkor. Chungkor means turning of the wheel of the Dharma. Okay. Lekche means, Lekpa Chewa means fine distinctions. F-I-N-E distinctions. Okay. The turning of the wheel in which the Buddha made fine distinctions. And now you know what distinctions he made. What was it? Yeah, I did mean it when I said that, and I didn't mean it when I said that. Okay. He's making distinctions. Okay? When I said everything existed by definition, I was only talking about this stuff. And when I said nothing existed by definition, I was talking about this other stuff. And he makes distinctions about what he said before. He draws distinctions about what he said in the wheel before that. Okay? In the two wheels before that. All right. Question?
I know there's lots of interpretations.
Yeah. She says, why does one sutra become a whole turning of the wheel? Actually, it's any sutra in which he expressed this thing about the three divisions, the three attributes. You see, it's not only the sutra called the true intent of the other sutras, but he actually taught this in many other sutras also. So it's that body of sutras in which he said, you can divide what I said about lacking any self-nature into three different kinds. What are they? Kuntak, Shemang, Yondu, okay? And you can make those distinctions, you know? And he didn't say it in only one sutra. He said it, this is the classic one in which he said it, but he also said it on other occasions. He did teach it on other occasions. And those, all those sutras together are known as the third turning of the wheel, okay? Where did he teach this one? At Yangbaten, which in Sanskrit is Vaishali. The big convocation or the big teaching. This is the way he taught it in Santa Cruz. This is the way he taught it in Miami. Okay. You see what I mean? And that's exactly how it happens. You know, wait, that's not what he said out in, you know, Indiana, you know, like that. It's exactly how it happens. Don't think it doesn't happen nowadays, you know. Somebody says, oh, I saw His Holiness in Washington, D.C., he said this. I say, yeah, but that's not the way he taught it in New York, you know. Why? Because New York people are different. We're smarter. All right? Okay. Yang Bachen. Okay, that's where he taught it. Who did he teach it to? Say, Tekpa? Tamche. Tekpa? Tamche. Tekpa means yana, or, you know, way, higher way, lower way. Tamche means everybody. Okay? Everybody should understand this eventually, okay? This is meant for everybody. Okay? And there's many interpretations about what he meant by Tekpa Tamche, but in the bottom line is, the third turning of the wheel is something good for everybody. Okay? Everybody should understand that this is literal. And this is what the Buddha really meant. Okay? Tekpa Tamche. What is the main subject matter of the third turning of the wheel? Say, Tseni. Sum. Tseni. Sum. Tseni here doesn't mean definition. Tseni here means attribute. Those three categories of the mind-only school. Sometimes the code name is attribute. Okay, if you want to make it easy, it's just the three groups of stuff that the mind-only school talks about. What? Kundaks, Shenwangs, Yondrups. Kundak meaning imaginary stuff. Okay? Shen or constructs, we've been calling it. Shenwang meaning anything that's changing or has causes, dependent things. And then Yondrup meaning totality, which is a code word in the mind-only school for emptiness. Okay, cool. Woo, you guys are good. By the way, I think we set the date for the second half of Geshe Thupten Rinchen's version of this, which will be next December, a year from December. So, if you want to, oh, a year from January, maybe. Anyway, if you want to make it, you can start planning, okay? In my opinion, the best explanation of mind-only school ever given in the English language, okay? Period. Okay, Tenisum. This is what he taught, and if you, after you write that, you're pretty much done tonight. And pretty much is literal. Axel asked me if the first one shouldn't be Cho. We don't have an umlauted O in English language. Okay, he's German, so he has one already, but, you know, it's really okay, it sounds more like U to an American than it sounds like O. You don't say Cho, you say Chu, which sounds more like Chu. So we use a U. Okay, and we have a rules for doing this, which is unusual in this world. And you can check it out sometime. It's in a document that we've actually written up, and the rules for how to transcribe. So it's at least it's standardized. The first rule is to be consistent, and it's consistent. All right. Okay. Say Chu, Namla, Ranki, Seniki, Dup, Madup, Lekpar, Che. Okay. Sorry, it's so long, but that is the viewpoint of the third turning of the wheel, okay? Chunam, you already know, means everything in the universe, all existing objects, okay? Ranki Teniki Dup Ma Dup means they exist by definition and they don't exist by definition, okay? Some exist by definition and some don't exist by definition. And Lekpar Che you had in the name of this turning of the wheel, which means to make that distinction very well. Lekpa. This is the lake in Lekso, Lekso in the Heart Sutra, right? Where the guy says, great, great, okay. Who? Lord Buddha complimenting his student that he just took over his body for half an hour to say all that stuff. And then when he's done, he says, oh, you're really smart, you know? Okay. Okay. So, Lekpa Che means the turning of the wheel, the viewpoint of the third turning of the wheel is that, hey, we have to make a distinction very carefully between saying certain things exist by definition and certain things don't exist by definition, okay? And there you get three different viewpoints. Now, if you were in the debate ground, they'd say, okay, feed it back to me right now, okay? Place of the first turn of the wheel.
Varanasi.
Place of the third turn of the wheel. Vaishali. Place of the second turn of the wheel. Vulture Speak. Viewpoint expressed in the first turn of the wheel.
Everything
exists by definition. Viewpoint expressed in the second one. Viewpoint expressed in the third one. You gotta divide it. Yeah. Okay. Oh, you're ahead of me. Who was he talking to in the first turning of the wheel? Meaning. Hinayana. Meaning, and that's on your homework. People who mentally belong to the first two schools of Indian Buddhism, the Abhidharma school and the logic school. Okay. Why? Because they have certain primitive ideas about what emptiness means. Okay? So we call them lower way. We're not dissing Theravada. Okay? You've got to be very careful. Okay? Theravada is beautiful. Okay? And who did he teach the second turn of the wheel to? Mahayana. Meaning, philosophically, people who belong to the mind-only school or the middle-way school. People who have that advanced viewpoint about emptiness. Okay? Who did he teach the third one to? Everybody. Okay? All right. Subject matter of the second turning of the wheel. Emptiness. Subject matter of the first turning of the wheel. Four noble truths. Subject matter of the third turning of the wheel. The three attributes of the mind-only school. Okay, those are Gundashin, Wan, and Yundus. Okay? All right, you got it. Now, I'm going to give you a little vignette from the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras. Why? This is just for your own information, okay? I mean, you could have gone home now. This is all extra. Sorry. Okay? Why do they call it turning the wheel? I mean, did you ever wonder what they mean when they say turning the wheel of the Dharma? You know, I mean, you have this vision of Lord Buddha. There's one of, you know, those old ice cream machines. And he's like, okay. All right. Here's where it comes from, all right? This presentation is a lot from the Abhidharma. And some of it's from the Perfection of Wisdom. But it's accepted by all schools. That's pretty cool. All right? So here you go. Oh, you got some more Tibetan there. Okay, say, Korlu, Gyurwe, Gyalpu, Kolo, Rinpoche. Okay, remember the long mandala offering? You go into all this stuff. Kolo Rinpoche, Lolo Rinpoche, Dumo Rinpoche, Lumo Rinpoche, Lamo Rinpoche, Dajo Rinpoche, Mabo Rinpoche, Dajo Rinpoche, Dajo Rinpoche. Okay, there are like these precious things that a world emperor has, okay? This is called a chakravartin, okay, in Sanskrit. Meaning, he who rules by the wheel, okay? And they have these wheels. And you know, when I first studied Abhidharma, and they said, look, the really good ones have a gold wheel and they can control the whole universe. And then the not so cool ones have a silver wheel and they can only control part of the universe and like that. And then I had this like vision of this little, you know, ninja wheel that he's got in his hand or something like that, you know, and it wasn't clear to me what it meant exactly. Kualo Rinpoche means the precious wheel, meaning one of the precious things that the king has. Okay, this is a king who controls, he has the karma of controlling the whole world. And the best ones have the karma to be begged by the whole world to do it. You see what I mean? And the ones with a little bit worse karma have to like threaten people. They have to, or have to go in an election or something. You see what I mean? But the ones who have really cool karma, people come and beg them to be president of the world, you know? And then they say, okay, I'll do it, you know? And they actually have signs on their body like the Buddhas have, but they're a little bit off center. Like they have, they're not quite perfect. They don't have the karma to be a Buddha. And there's, you know, like when you get close to being a Buddha, you can be a world president or something by unanimous decision of 6 billion people. And you're not quite enlightened, and your bump isn't quite big enough, and the things on your body are not quite, they're not very clear or distinct, like the Dharma wheel on your hand and stuff like that, okay? Later, when we studied the commentary on the precious wheel in the mandala offering commentary, it turned out to be really cool. Precious wheel is 2,000, it's a spaceship, okay? It's a flying saucer. It's 2,000 miles big. The diameter of this spaceship is 2,000 miles across. Okay? First thing. Can travel 500,000 miles a day. Okay? And the function of it is to carry the king, the emperor, and his four forces. You know, according to Buddhism, the world exists as four continents. So he can, like, pile in the Marines and the Air Force and the Army into this flying saucer and be on the Western continent in half an hour to subdue any rebellions there and stuff like that, okay? And that's the point of the wheel. In the scripture, it says it's actually a flying saucer that flies through the air. And then he can load his whole military, you know, thousands of troops into it and then be over in Kansas in half an hour, you know, if there's some trouble over there or something like that. And that's the meaning of the wheel, okay? And in the Abhidharma, they explain that that's why the wheel of the Dharma is called the wheel, okay? Why? Because you conquer unconquered spiritual territory with the wheel, okay? Like, if you have one of these wheels, meaning one of these flying saucers, called what? The Dharma, okay? You can take over all the spiritual territory that you haven't got, that you haven't conquered yet. You see what I mean? Especially the path of seeing. Okay? And in fact, in the Abhidharma system, it always refers to the path of seeing. You see? And in the other schools, they say not really. Okay? But all the schools agree that the main meaning of covering spiritual territory that you haven't covered before happens in those 20 minutes and in the next 10 hours of the direct perception of emptiness. So the wheel ultimately refers to that, okay? Dharma wheel, meaning super fast spaceship, means that in 10 hours and 20 minutes, you can just about cover every Dharma teaching ever taught on this planet. Seriously, okay? The day after you've seen emptiness directly, you understand the content of the entire scriptures, 200,000 books in 10 hours. You know, you will never find a thing again that you really don't understand. Okay? I mean, that's a lot of territory to cover in one day after zillions of lifetimes, okay? So they call, that's the main wheel of the Dharma, is that event. And therefore they call it comparable to the king's wheel. You send into the world emperor's wheel, okay? And that's why they call it wheel of Dharma, okay? Did you have a question? He said about the emptiness and the fingertip. We're going to get there. I'll explain that idea a little bit more, okay? We'll get a little bit more to it. But that's the main meaning of the wheel, okay? It's pretty detailed in scripture, and I'm not going to go into it. You can read it in the Abhidharma if you want to. There's also an explanation that the wheel with the eight spokes represents the eightfold Arya path, the eight practices of a person who has seen emptiness directly, okay? And there's a very important teaching on it, on the rim referring to one of those, and the hub referring to another one, and then the spokes referring to another, to all the other ones, and like that. And you should learn that sometime. I'm not going to go into, we don't have time to go into it tonight, but it refers to the eight spiritual qualities of an Arya. Okay, so that's another way to explain that wheel. And that's the wheel of the Dharma. That's the one you see with the two deer. Why are there two deer? Because the first time he turned the wheel was in Deer Park, in Sarnath. Okay? So that's the Buddhist symbol. You see it on top of Rashi Gambling Temple. There's two deer and a Dharma wheel. And that's the meaning of that. Okay? You can divide Dharma wheel into two types. Okay? Turning the wheel of the Dharma is done on two levels. Okay? One is, and this really is the last thing in the Tibetan, okay? Say Lungi Chungkor. Lungi Chungkor. Lung, as you mean, as you know, means speech, okay? It's ultimately related to a word lung, different spelling, which means air or wind, okay? It's what comes out of your mouth. Ha. Okay, and that lung means the physical Dharma, okay, meaning lectures or CD-ROMs or woodblock prints, okay, or typewritten transcripts or anything like that. That would all be called lung, meaning the physical Dharma, the Dharma in the physical sense, okay. Chungkor means wheel of the Dharma, okay. So there are two wheels of the Dharma. One is the physical teachings of Buddhism are called Lungi Chungkor. Okay? The wheel of the Dharma in the form of teachings. Okay? Physical teachings. Whether it's verbal, audible, or visible, or sometimes the Buddha can, you know, make, I mean, they also teach with motions and stuff like that. It's, you know, they can teach with all their senses, but that's another point. Okay? Then you have the Topi Chungkor. Okay, Tope Chungkor. Tope Chungkor. Turning the wheel of the Dharma, Chungkor. But Tope, Tope means spiritual realizations. Where your mind actually undergoes a change. Like Tonglam, path of seeing, is a big Tope. I mean, how you are 10 minutes before seeing emptiness directly and how you are 10 minutes after seeing emptiness directly, that's a Tope. You know, it's a realization. A level of realization. You change. Your mind changes permanently. Okay? Forever. Your mind changes. Okay? That kind of thing happening to you is called the wheel of the Dharma in the form of spiritual realization. That's called Tokpa. Okay? Those of you who studied the Diamond Cutter, we had this when we discussed how long will the Dharma stay in the world, you know? Which one do you think lasts longer in the world? The Dharma in the form of the physical form, or the Dharma in the form of mental realizations in the hearts of people? Which dies out first? The ideas die out first, you know? There'll still be the CD-ROM in a library somewhere, but nobody will know what emptiness means. You see what I mean? So the physical Dharma will be around later. I mean, this is the last page of the Abhidharma Kosha. It's very depressing. You know, he says, by the way, Dharma's going to die out on this planet, and this is how it's going to happen. How many years does it take? You guys studied it in the Diamond Cutter. 5,000 years. Something happens halfway through. According to the sutras, after 2,500 years, what happens? Spreads to the land of the ruddy-faced people. And seriously, in the sutras, we found it. I don't believe this kind of stuff. So I went and found it. It's there, okay? After exactly 2,500 years, it will spread to the west. How many years have gone by? No, I think 1958, or, I forget what it was. Anyway, we're exactly at that point. We're exactly at the point predicted in the sutras when Buddhism was spread to the Western countries. It's very cool. Okay, so we're exactly halfway through. And that's the distinction between Lungi Chungkor and Topi Chungkor. So, what have we been talking about when we talked about, which of these two have we been talking about when we talked about the Buddha turning the wheel of the Dharma? It's mostly verbal, you see. We've been talking about what did he say? What did he mean when he said that? Okay? That's Lungi Chungkor. Okay? What does Topi Chungkor mean? It is triggered by Lungi Chungkor. You see what I mean? So we talked about an example during the first turning of the wheel tonight. We talked about it. What? One of the, his name was Kaudinya, okay? One of the five first disciples of the Buddha first time he taught the four Arya truths, very briefly, very shortly after, he saw emptiness directly. So that Lungi Chungkor triggered a Dobi Chungkor. You see what I mean? So that the teacher sets in motion this big gear, you know, think of it as a big gear. You know, Lungi Chungkor, I'm teaching you Dharma, okay? And that's a big gear going like that. And then that catches a gear in the student's heart. And then suddenly they get it. And that's a Dobi Chungkor. You see what I mean? So the Lungi Chungkor triggers the Dobi Chungkor. Like a wheel. You see what I mean? And that's the other meaning. That's what it means to turn the wheel. You see, it's very cool. The teacher turns the physical, verbal wheel of the Dharma. And then inside the student's heart, these realizations get triggered or set off. And that's the turning of the wheel. And then what do? They go verbalize it to somebody else, and that triggers another Dobi Chungkor, and then it comes down to us. You see? It's a bunch of gears going off and setting off other gears. And that's how you turn the wheel. You see what I mean? So it's very cool. The turning is from disciple to student who becomes the next, teacher to student who becomes the next teacher, who teaches it to the next student who becomes the next teacher, and then it's spread down to us for 2,500 years. Yeah? Dobi Chungkor and what? Oh, big difference. Dobi Chungkor is, if I describe emptiness to you well, and you go home and, you know, David Sykes in that vast apartment he's in now, you know, that he's sitting there and then suddenly sees emptiness directly, I have just triggered a Dobi Chungkor in him. See, my Lungi Chungkor has caught the gears, probably somewhere under that chrome, well, anyway, and set off another wheel inside him. That's a Dobi Chungkor, okay? And Dubden is totally different. Dubden means the result of the outcome. Buddha is sitting there, the Bodhisattva asks him a tough question, Buddha sends him back, Bodhisattva gets an idea. Oh yeah, it's like that idea represents a profit of the exchange or some kind of result that came out of their interaction. That's what Dubden means, yeah. Dubden is a very specific word for this particular text at the moment where the Bodhisattva gets it. But it's more it's less in the sense of his realizations than in the sense of a profit that is realized from this transaction. Okay? The interaction. It's the result of the interaction. Okay? It's a code word in this school, in this text, in this sutra, for the moment at which the Bodhisattva says, I get it. You didn't mean what you said in the first one, and you didn't mean what you said in the second one. You meant what you just told me, right? And Buddha says, you're so smart, okay? And then the whole mind of the school starts, okay? And that's cool. All right, we'll stop there. The precious wheel owned by the wheel-empowered emperor. See, Chakravartin means the king who gets his power. Gyurwa means who gets his power from the wheel. Okay? They're actually called emperors who get their power from the wheel. Okay? And Chakra means wheel, and Vartan means who, emperor who has that wheel. Okay? So they're called wheel-empowered emperors. And now you know what empowers them is they have really good spaceships. Okay? Alright? You know, I used to think it was some little thing they held and they threw at their enemies or something like that. Okay? They have spaceships. Okay? Okay, Mr. Pinto, what do you think it really means? Things don't exist by definition. Okay, Chungkor means turning of the wheel of the Dharma. Okay, this is the name of Dharma wheel turning number two. Okay, because during that turning of the wheel, Lord Buddha said, nothing exists by definition. Nothing has any identity from its own side, okay? And so that turning of the wheel, that whole career, part of his career where he taught that, is called the turning of the wheel where he said nothing exists by definition, okay? Where did he teach it? Same place as the Heart Sutra. That, in fact, was part of that. Vulture's Peak. Here's the Tibetan. This should be Re, okay? This place still exists. It's in a place called Rajagura. Okay, it's also in Bengal. It's a peak. Okay, Vulture's Peak. Okay, Scott Hamilton didn't climb it yet, but he's planning. Okay. For those of you who care, Jagra means vulture. Pumbo means skanda, but it means here shaped like a vulture. Okay. And Ri means peak. Okay. Who were the students that he meant that teaching for? Tek Chen. Okay, Mahayana. Mahayana from the point of view of their viewpoint about emptiness. Okay, people who had a very mature viewpoint about emptiness. Okay. Question. Would the mind-only school say it was taught for middle-way school people? Second turning of the wheel. Would they say it was aimed at middle-way school people? Yeah. That's the one they think is literal. When the Buddha said all that radical stuff, who believed him? Middle-way, those dumb middle-way people. They were taken in by it. Okay? Okay. By the way, real mind-only school scholars say we also were the students meant for that because we knew he was talking figuratively. Okay. All right. That's another, we'll do that some other day. Okay. Main subject of the second turning of the wheel. We're going to become turning of the wheel experts by the end of tonight. What's Tomba Nyi mean? Emptiness, shunyata. Okay? Emptiness. The lack of a pen that comes from its own side that was never there in the first place and won't be there and couldn't be there now anyway. Okay? All right? What viewpoint did Lord Buddha teach during the second turning of the wheel? That's enough for me to get some smoothie. That's why I write the long ones. By the way, after you've written it, I can tell you can just add a ma to the one you had before. Okay. You just negativize the one that came before. Okay, ma. You just add the one syllable ma, which means things. You know, in English, when you reverse something, you have to say nothing, no existing thing in the universe exists by definition. You see what I mean? And translators sometimes don't catch that. In English, the positive you say, everything in the world exists by definition. That's the first turning of the wheel. That's the viewpoint of the first turn of the wheel. But when you get to the second turn of the wheel, in normal English we say, nothing exists by definition. Okay? And some translators mistranslated it, everything doesn't exist by definition. Which you don't say in normal English because it gives you the wrong meaning sometimes. It's ambiguous. Okay? Okay, ready for the third turn of the wheel. Where is it? Name of it. By the way, sometimes it's just called the last one, but that's too easy, so I wrote out the long one. Okay. Say, Lekche Chungkor. Lekche Chungkor. Chungkor means turning of the wheel of the Dharma. Okay. Lekche means, Lekpa Chua means fine distinctions. F-I-N-E distinctions, okay? The turning of the wheel in which the Buddha made fine distinctions. And now you know what distinctions he made. What was it? Yeah, I did mean it when I said that, and I didn't mean it when I said that, okay? He's making distinctions, okay? When I said everything existed by definition, I was only talking about this stuff. And when I said nothing existed by definition, I was talking about this other stuff. And he makes distinctions about what he said before. He draws distinctions about what he said in the wheel before that. Okay? In the two wheels before that. All right? Question? Yeah. She says, why does one sutra become a whole turning of the wheel? Actually, it's any sutra in which he expressed this thing about the three divisions, the three attributes. You see, it's not only the sutra called the true intent of the other sutras, but he actually taught this in many other sutras also. So it's that body of sutras in which he said, you can divide what I said about lacking any self-nature into three different kinds. What are they? Kuntar, Shemang, Yondu, okay? And you can make those distinctions, you know? And he didn't say it in only one sutra. He said it, this is the classic one in which he said it, but he also said it on other occasions. He did teach it on other occasions. And those, all those sutras together are known as the third turning of the wheel, okay? Where did he teach this one? At Yangbachan, which in Sanskrit is Vaishali. The big convocation or the big teaching. This is the way he taught it in Santa Cruz. This is the way he taught it in Miami. Okay. You see what I mean? And that's exactly how it happens. You know, wait, that's not what he said out in, you know, Indiana, you know, like that. It's exactly how it happens. Don't think it doesn't happen nowadays, you know. Somebody says, well, I saw His Holiness in Washington, D.C., he said this. I say, yeah, but that's not the way he taught it in New York. You know, why? Because New York people are different. We're smarter. All right. Okay. Yang Bachan. Okay, that's where he taught it. Who did he teach it to? Say, Tekpa? Tamche. Tekpa? Tamche. Tekpa means yana, or, you know, way, higher way, lower way. Tamche means everybody. Okay? Everybody should understand this eventually, okay? This is meant for everybody. Okay? And there's many interpretations about what he meant by Tekpa Tamche, but in the bottom line is, the third turn of the wheel is something good for everybody. Okay? Everybody should understand that this is literal. And this is what the Buddha really meant. Okay? Tekpa Tamche. What is the main subject matter of the third turning of the wheel? Say, Tenyi.
Tenyi.
Tum. Tenyi. Tenyi here doesn't mean definition. Tenyi here means attribute. Those three categories of the mind-only school. Sometimes the code name is attribute. Okay? If you want to make it easy, it's just the three groups of stuff that the mind-only school talks about. What? Gundaks, Shenwars, Yondruks. Gundak meaning imaginary stuff. Okay? Shen or constructs, we've been calling it. Shenwang meaning anything that's changing or has causes, dependent things. And then Yondruk meaning totality, which is a code word in the mind-only school for emptiness. Okay? Cool. Ooh, you guys are good. By the way, I think we set the dates for the second half of Geshe Thupten Rinchen's version of this, which would be next December, a year from December. So if you want to, oh, a year from January, maybe. Anyway, if you want to make it, you can start planning, okay? In my opinion, the best explanation of mind-only school ever given in the English language, okay? Period. Okay, Tenyi-sum. This is what he taught, and if you, after you write that, you're pretty much done tonight. And pretty much is literal. Axel asked me if the first one shouldn't be Cho. We don't have an umlauted O in the English language. Okay, he's German, so he has one already, but you know, it's really okay. It sounds more like U to an American than it sounds like O. You don't say Cho, you say Chu, which sounds more like Chu. So we use a U. Okay, and we have a rule for doing this, which is unusual in this world, and you can check it out sometime. It's in a document that we've actually written up, and the rules for how to transcribe. So it's at least it's standardized. Okay, the first rule is to be consistent, and it's consistent. All right. Okay, say Chu, Namla, Ranki, Teniki, Dup, Madup, Lepa, Che. Okay, sorry it's so long, but that is the viewpoint of the third turn of the wheel, okay? Chunam, you already know, means everything in the universe, all existing objects, okay? Ranki Teniki, Drup, Ma, Drup means they exist by definition, and they don't exist by definition, okay? Some exist by definition, and some don't exist by definition. And Lekpache you had in the name of this turning of the wheel, which means to make that distinction very well. Lekpa. This is the lake in Lekso, Lekso in the Heart Sutra, right? Where the guy says, great, great, okay. Who? Lord Buddha complimenting his student that he just took over his body for half an hour to say all that stuff. And then when he's done, he says, oh, you're really smart, you know? Okay. Okay. So, Lekpache means the turning of the wheel, the viewpoint of the third turning of the wheel is that, hey, we have to make a distinction very carefully between saying certain things exist by definition and certain things don't exist by definition, okay? And there you get three different viewpoints. Now, if you were in the debate ground, they'd say, okay, feed it back to me right now, okay? Place of the first turning of the wheel. Varanasi. Place of the third turning of the wheel. Vaishali. Place of the second turning of the wheel. Vulture Speak. Viewpoint expressed in the first turning of the wheel. Everything exists by definition. Viewpoint expressed in the second one. Viewpoint expressed in the third one. You gotta divide it. Yeah. Okay. Oh, you're ahead of me. Who was he talking to in the first turning of the wheel? Mienli. Hinayana. Meaning, and that's on your homework, people who mentally belong to the first two schools of Indian Buddhism. The Abhidhamma school and the logic school. Okay. Why? Because they have certain primitive ideas about what emptiness means. Okay? So we call them lower way. We're not dissing Theravada. Okay? You've got to be very careful. Okay? Theravada is beautiful. Okay? And who did he teach the second turning of the wheel to? Mahayana. Meaning, philosophically, people who belong to the mind-only school or the middle-way school. People who have that advanced viewpoint about emptiness. Okay? Who did he teach the third one to? Everybody. Okay. All right. Subject matter of the second turning of the wheel. Emptiness. Subject matter of the first turning of the wheel. Four noble truths. Subject matter of the third turning of the wheel. The three attributes of the mind-only school. Okay, those are all Gundashi, Wan, and Yundus. Okay. All right, you got it. Now, I'm going to give you a little vignette from the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras. Why? This is just for your own information, okay? I mean, you could have gone home now. This is all extra. Sorry. Okay? Why did they call it turning the wheel? I mean, did you ever wonder what they mean when they say turning the wheel of the Dharma? You know, I mean, you have this vision of Lord Buddha. There's one of, you know, those old ice cream machines. He's like, okay. All right. Here's where it comes from, all right? This presentation is a lot from the Abhidhamma and some of it's from the Perfection of Wisdom. But it's accepted by all schools. That's pretty cool. All right? So here you go. Oh, you got some more Tibetan there. Okay, say, Korlu, Gyurwe, Gyalpu, Korlo, Rinpoche. Okay, remember the long mandala offering? You go to all this stuff. Karla Rinpoche, Lama Rinpoche, Dhamma Rinpoche, Lama Rinpoche, Lama Rinpoche, Dhamma Rinpoche, Lama Rinpoche, Dhamma Rinpoche. Okay, there are like these precious things that a world emperor has, okay? This is called a Chakravartin, okay, in Sanskrit, meaning he who rules by the wheel, okay? And they have these wheels, and you know, when I first studied Abhidharma, and they said, look, the really good ones have a gold wheel, and they can control the whole universe, and then the not-so-cool ones have a silver wheel, and they can only control part of the universe, and like that. And then I had this, like, vision of this little, you know, ninja wheel that he's got in his hand or something like that, you know, and it wasn't clear to me what it meant exactly. Korlo Rinpoche means the precious wheel, meaning one of the precious things that the king has. Okay, this is a king who controls, he has the karma of controlling the whole world, and the best ones have the karma to be begged by the whole world to do it. You see what I mean? And the ones with a little bit worse karma have to, like, threaten people. They have to, or have to go in an election or something. You see what I mean? But the ones who have really cool karma, people come and beg them to be president of the world, you know? And then they say, okay, I'll do it, you know? And they actually have signs on their body like the Buddhas have, but they're a little bit off center. Like they're not quite perfect. They don't have the karma to be a Buddha. And there's, you know, like when you get close to being a Buddha, you can be a world president or something by unanimous decision of 6 billion people. and you're not quite enlightened, and your, you know, your bump isn't quite big enough, and the things on your body are not quite, they're not very clear or distinct, like the Dharma wheel on your hand and stuff like that, okay? Later, when we studied the commentary on the precious wheel in the mandala offering commentary, it turned out to be really cool. Precious wheel is 2,000, it's a spaceship, okay? It's a flying saucer. It's 2,000 miles big. The diameter of the spaceship is 2,000 miles across, okay? First thing, can travel 500,000 miles a day, okay? And the function of it is to carry the king, the emperor, and his four forces. You know, according to Buddhism, the world exists with four continents. So he can, like, pile in the Marines and the Air Force and the Army into this flying saucer and be on the Western continent in half an hour to subdue any rebellions there and stuff like that, okay? And that's the point of the wheel. In the scripture, it says it's actually a flying saucer that flies through the air. And then he can load his whole military, you know, thousands of troops into it, and then be over in Kansas in half an hour, you know, if there's some trouble over there or something like that. And that's the meaning of the wheel, okay? And in the Abhidharma, they explain that that's why the wheel of the Dharma is called the wheel, okay? Why? Because you conquer unconquered spiritual territory with the wheel, okay? Like, if you have one of these wheels, meaning one of these flying saucers, called what? The Dharma, okay? You can take over all the spiritual territory that you haven't got, that you haven't conquered yet. You see what I mean? Especially the path of seeing. Okay? And in fact, in the Abhidharma system, it always refers to the path of seeing. You see? And in the other schools, they say not really. Okay? But all the schools agree.
This is the end of Class 5. You have been listening to What the Buddha Really Meant with Geshe Michael Roach, presented by the Asian Classics Institute. The Asian Classics Institute is dedicated to preserving the pure teachings and practice of Buddhism. For a listing of other topics available, write to the Asian Classics Institute, P.O. Box 20373, New York, New York, 10009, or call 212-475-7752.